Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion, the interior offensive line. Joining me for that is Kevin Ostreicher as we count down number 6 through 1 on our respective list. Kevin, how you doing?
Doing well, Ken. You know, this is always an intriguing time because we know how much the Ravens love their drafting and developing. And so I'm excited for this, especially the first year of a new Ravens era where we'll probably learn a lot about, you know, where the team stands on certain positions. And obviously coming out of this draft, because you never know how the board's going to fall, I do expect some veteran additions after it. So maybe a spot that they maybe didn't like the guys that were falling to them, or, you know, they felt like there's a guy out there in free agency after the draft they could sign to make an impact. Everything connects together, which I always love.
Yeah, it is fun. The Ravens right now have the fewest players under contract in the entire NFL. So this draft is very important to them. There's no doubt they have backup plans, as you're mentioning. I mean, it could be some old familiar names, whether that's Jadeveon Clowney might be a possibility. I don't think he's signed yet, did he? He didn't sign today or anything. It almost seems like every year he's really trying to avoid camp more than anything else. That's often true with a lot of the older pass rushers. They don't really need training camp, and we saw what Kyle Van Noy was able to do when he came in week 4 or whatever. They're ready to go. So I'm still hopeful that a guy like Clowney might be in their plans. All right, we talked about a lot of things in the first show. And one of the things we talked about was how many players in this tackle group really are probably going to end up kicking inside. It's actually a fairly light year for guys, I think, who are going to stay at tackle. And there are a lot of guys who are in the tweener group who don't really have the proper tools to play a tackle, but also their build is too lean to move inside and really be effective guards. They're just not built like guards would be greatly challenged to play with the leverage on the inside that they need to.
Right. And that's where, especially when you get later in this draft process, especially this year, versatility matters a lot. And I'm not saying that, of course, it's the only thing that matters, but the more you can do at the NFL level, the more chance you have at sticking around and being a fit for a team where maybe they view you as a tackle, it maybe kicks inside the guard, but then, you know, maybe there are also situations where if you played on both sides, you know, maybe a team's looking for a right tackle and you played left, but you also have experience playing right, you know, that all helps. And then this class in particular, especially in that like late day 2 to really all the way through day 3, there are a lot of guys where we kind of, you mention it and a lot of people talk about it, where it's kind of jumbled up because guys are so close in ranking to one another for different reasons, obviously different skill sets, different areas that they have strengths and weaknesses, but it's a really intriguing tackle class in a year where obviously Ravens don't really need a pure tackle on their roster.
Yeah. And that is one of the interesting things we talked about also was the Ravens, you know, fit for a lot of players who are pure tackles. It doesn't make a lot of sense. They could get a developmental guy, maybe, who they expect to be ready in 2028, but then they'd have 2 developmental guys on the roster. Carson Vinson had a great developmental year, and that, you know, sir, if you're talking about the Ravens' current situation, I think it's one of the best they've ever had entering a draft with no need for an offensive tackle. If they don't choose to, they could take a guard tackle, but their roster doesn't even really have room for a 4th pure tackle. It wouldn't even make sense for them to have one. If they did, it'd be a developmental guy who'd be their 9th, or sorry, probably a 10th offensive lineman, while they had 5 OIOL that were available on game day. So it's going to be tough for them to fit in some of these guys, but like every year, and this is what's so interesting about the tackle position, it's like a sieve. A lot of these guys are going to run through, and they just don't have the characteristics to play tackle in the NFL. But they were the best linemen on their college team, and that's why they played left tackle, and they get moved in the pro level. There was a pod about that a while back, which had some very interesting numbers on that migration. But it's definitely it's a very significant migration every year to see tackles moving inside.
Yeah, it's versatility is king, and you know sometimes it's just the more you can do, but other times it's just literally in your best interest because, you know, that's where you project best. So both worlds there.
We definitely have seen some guys, and we're going to mention one pretty early here, who, you know, have already basically, actually, we're not going to mention him here because we were on the IOL show, but Brian Parker, for example, is a guy I left off the offensive tackle list because he's already effectively committed to trying to play center. And it's a great move by him. It's just absolutely getting ahead of that. Not having to worry about development. You know, I think he went to one of the one of the, forgot it was a Senior Bowl or the Shrine Bowl that he was at, and took reps there at center. And smart move, very smart move to get ahead of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll continue with our list of 6 through 10. Who's your number six guy, Kevin?
Yeah, my number six guy, Max Ihanechor out of Minnesota. Or sorry, I don't know.
Arizona State.
Yes, where he, at the end of the day, is somebody that started, you know, a little, I guess, late coming into football, had to kind of learn the game, and I think is still learning today, which is, you know, I know that some people look at that and they're like, no, another one of these. No, we can't do that. You got to have guys that are ready. I think he's someone that has shown so much over the course of his career. And guess what? You get the basketball background again, as something we talked about a lot last show, and you get, and he actually soccer as well for him, which I think is really intriguing. Now for him, what really intrigues me more than anything else, with the 6'6", 321 frame that he has a 34 and a half inch arms, and someone that really just, like, I don't know the right word for this, but I guess he just feels like he makes pass rushers uncomfortable in terms of some of the angles they have to take because of his ability to just get in really good spots and positions to almost throw guys off of their game. Some of the stats behind him as well, and I see this on the scouting reports all the time, 0 sacks for him and 3 quarterback hits across nearly 500 pass block snaps in 2025. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, Ken, on some of the, I guess, production, O-line production that he had over the course of his career at Arizona State. 98.5% pressure efficiency. So you're looking at that as one of the best in the Big 12, which is awesome. Now, he also has a mean streak, and I think that's something that Eric DaCosta talked about, I believe, on 105.7, if I'm not mistaken, where he talked about that with John Simpson. Simpson coming back to Baltimore, and he obviously played with that physicality and mean streak, and that's something that Ihanechor actually does, and I think the Ravens are looking to get back to on their offensive line. Now, again, he's still catching up on a lot of different things, and there can be some times where he oversets against guys that are speed rushers, and that can get him into some trouble. You know, climbing can be a bit of an issue at times, recognition. But I think some of that just comes with time and learning the game. So I'd be intrigued to see where he ends up going in this draft. I feel like a team's going to really value him more than another, and you kind of look at his work and, you know, his college career and understand that he is still learning the game a little bit, and some of that stuff is going to catch up with him. But he's really intriguing for a lot of different reasons to me.
All right, I love him. I've got him at number 4. Great story. A Nigerian immigrant who came to Compton at age 13. He played soccer and basketball, as you mentioned. He went to JUCO at East LA College, where he played for 2 years. And I believe that to be his first real experience with football. He might have played something in his last year of high school, but basically that's his first time. Shown extraordinary growth for 5 years of college play. Medicals are fairly clean. He missed 2 weeks with a labrum surgery after 24, from which he recovered prior to the 25 season. So I think that's going to be okay. That's the thing he's got. Now, of course, that the shoulder problems can come back and are very serious for offensive linemen, but I would consider that to be a resolved issue since he played 25. I have him at 33 7/8, but either way, his arm length is acceptable. It's not extreme, but it's acceptable. He's an outstanding pure pass blocker. He has very quick feet from his background, has that mirror, does not have a well-developed method of chopping his feet and moving back and forth. But here's the thing, that's very coachable and something that he could improve on and I think get better. So with good coaching, I think he moves up the charts here. He needs to learn how to use his plus length. He's too much of a reactive pass blocker to my way of thinking of it. And you look at the game against Texas Tech, he stopped Bailey in height in that game. That's the one he wants to show his mother over and over again, and probably play at Thanksgiving and do the other things. But a lot of teams, I mean, a lot of the top offensive tackles in this draft, they got taken to the woodshed by either Texas Tech or Miami or both. And that was not the case with Ihanechor, who had an excellent game there, way ahead of his experience level in terms of football. I can't really use that as a standard, but I will say that his growth over 5 years has been so extraordinary that I'd expect that he is a coachable player and someone who Ledford could take to a higher level still. In terms of run blocking, his foot speed to pull and climb is there. He looks for work on the backside of run blocks. I want to see that. I want to see it in particular from a guy with his kind of foot speed, because Stanley had it and he didn't have the same sort of extraordinary foot speed that Iheanacho has. He did struggle with penalties in his final season at ASU. That's another area, but it's also an area of potential correction too. So 16 flags in 2,107 college snaps is one every 131.7. All but two of his snaps career were at right tackle. So he's one of the few right tackles coming out of college in recent years that I think possibly could make the transition to left tackle. He's certainly got the foot speed and the general feet to do it. He needs a lot of coaching to be able to do it, but it's very rare that there's a guy coming out at right tackle who you think can move to left tackle. The two ways that can happen are, one is you have some weird developmental path like Iheanacho had, or you have two guys who both could be left tackles playing at some huge program like Ohio State or one of the other places where you could see them moving. But I think he's a player who may be under projected as a mid round two pick. I could see him sneaking into round one. If he's still there at 45, I think the Ravens have to consider him. And I think he'd be, an outstanding choice. I think that I'm not even sure what you do to move somebody at that point, but I think he'd be too enticing a pick probably to pass up. Probably he ends up at guard and you struggle through some additional learning with him, but he's proven so adept at doing it. I think I'd take the risks. So anyway, I'd be okay with him at 45 for the Ravens.
He's super intriguing. I mean, what you mentioned is key, is that, you know, he's still learning, but he's already proven so much and proven that he can do it. So that'd be one thing. If, you know, you get a toolsy guy that, you know, is still learning the game, but hasn't necessarily put as much together and still has a long way to go, that can maybe get you into some trouble if you're relying on him and saying, hey, we need you ready in X amount of time. And they haven't shown, you know, some of the growth or at least a lot of the growth that we've seen from a guy like Iheanacho. So I would be totally cool with this, and someone that would be super, like, again, I think Dwayne Ledford would just see him as like a ball of clay, just being able to mold him into a really good player. And like you mentioned, where it's not going to be day one here, but I think the potential is so high where, you know, by the time you reach a certain point, you maybe would feel comfortable, and you can put him in a competition as well if you wanted to early at that guard spot and say, hey, go out and show us something. What do you got? And if it relies on, you know, maybe Emory Jones does win that job outright, which I guess I would expect at that point, but I think it'd be a really good, almost like a barometer for where he is developmentally.
Right. He legitimately could be a guy who is a year away from even playing at guard, but my sense is if he and Emory Jones were to compete right now for the right guard job, he'd eat Emory Jones's lunch. That he's way ahead of him in terms of development, in terms of upside, in terms of a lot of things. And you look at who Emory Jones was a year ago. He wasn't nearly the prospect that Iheanacho is. And I don't think we can say that Emory Jones has made a lot of progress in the last year, given the fact that he really wasn't practicing for a fair amount of that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, number six guy. Mine is Caleb Lemieux of Utah. 6'6", 313, 33 3/8 on the arms. He won't be 22 until December, so that's very intriguing. He's one of the younger players in this draft. Outstanding athlete, great movement profile. The 25 bench reps are just okay, but 4.99 40 and a 174 10 yard. He's a young, developing, athletic left tackle. He has the movement skills needed to stick at left tackle despite length that may be slightly below the line, and I wouldn't be a hardliner on this one here. I think there's guys playing that position who could do it. He could also move to right tackle if that were the desire, but I think the movement skills and the feet are there that he should probably try to, some team is going to try and develop him as a left tackle and draft him higher for that purpose. Good pass blocker, hand usage is quick. Not particularly powerful as of now. Strength is definitely an issue. Another guy who doesn't simply hit both flippers at the same time like a pinball player. He has a plan, and that has to be part of his game because he's making up for less than ideal length by going back and forth with purposeful hand usage. He has some solid, I would say he has solid contact balance. He can absorb and recover as opposed to absorb and stumble. Okay, so what do I mean by that? depending on the an edge rusher will try and do multiple things with a half man move oftentimes to try and get a player off kilter. Now, typically with a bull rush, you're pushing with both hands. It's a different skill set to try and absorb that. I'm really talking about half man moves and the desire for a player to either beat with speed with a cross chop or with other moves that involve first contact, or set up a counter with some sort of set of outside half man move that he's then going to move inside with. But I think he did a better job of not taking that stumbly step back with that first contact than a lot of other tackles that I've seen. Works with the guards pretty well on stunt and twist hands off. That might be good Utah coaching. They obviously had a great offensive line this year, led by Fano and Lomu. What else from his run blocking? I don't think he has any fear of being out in space, and he shouldn't with his size. His good feet work. He maintains his feet well in level two and on poles. Does not probably finish as often as I would like. I'd like to see a guy who rides his guy to the ground more often. It's not really his game. He's solid on combination blocks. A guy who needs certainly time in a weight room, but again, he's young, and I don't expect him to have his grown man strength at age 21. But the most important part of being an offensive tackle, the good feet are already there in spades. Five flags in 1,620 college snaps, is one every 324, so that's very good. All but 32 snaps of his college career were at left tackle, but he's been a starter for just two seasons. He's another player who could certainly break into round one. He's likely gone at some spot between 14 and 45 where the Ravens select. If he's there at 45, you can add him to Ihanichor as a player the Ravens should consider. So, they're my four and six guys. I take Ihanichor over Lomu, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I have Lomu at number five. So I just, kind of similar between the two, and a lot of good points that you talked about, especially because for him, I think the thing that I'm looking at is, again, and it's a theme with a lot of these guys, the run blocking and pass protection gap between the two, where I think that could be the difference for a lot of different things. But again, like, he's so good in some of the stuff he does. Like, again, he explodes really well. He's able to process really effectively. He understands that. He's able to slide out really well. He pulls really effectively. So to me, I just think that there is, I don't know, I personally believe that with Lomu, he's someone that I would trust immediately it tackle earlier than a guy like Ihanichor. But at the end of the day, they're both really close for me, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer with either of them. I just think that for me, and with the frame as well, where again, he comes in at the 6'6", 313, there's a lot to like about him. I just think that the reason I had Lomu at five and Ihanichor at six is because, while honestly, my take is that I think Ihanichor's ceiling at the NFL could be higher than Caleb Lomu, which might be a hot take, but at the end of the day, I think that Lomu is more NFL ready now, which is why I put him where he is.
All right, let's fast forward to draft night for a second. And we're in the second round, and we're looking at the board and the Ravens are picking. Are you upset? Or are you happy with either of these guys being drafted at number 45 if that's the Ravens' primary offensive line move this year? Now, they'll have a secondary move to get a center if they get either of these guys, because I don't think either of these guys are moving into center. I don't think. But if they drafted one of them, they're moving into guard. Would you be okay with either of them in the second round?
Yeah, I'd be fine with either of them, under the assumption that they're moving to guard. That would be the thing where I think, to me, 14, obviously you need a starter who can play. And starter, I think, is, it's lost value over the years as people just play. But a guy that's going to play a lot of different roles and snaps for you. 45, I think, is kind of the same thing, where I think even last year, the rookie class and their production was underwhelming. And, a lot of that, I think, gives me hope for 2026, because I'm essentially viewing as you're getting a second rookie class in. And, these guys can kind of work and be molded. But I think, to me, if there is a guy on the board, and I don't know who this would be at 14, if it's Sadiq or I don't know, maybe you take Delane or someone along those lines if he's there. Maybe Bane falls and they make the decision, even with the report, to take him. And then you can take a guy like Lomu or Heinachor. I think that's a pretty good first 2 days, because I'm not, again, I'm not married to the idea of the Ravens taking, you know, linemen in round one, mainly because I think that there's a decent possibility they won't do it, because maybe Vengiwane is gone, or, you know, Fano is someone they don't want to take at 14, or he's just not there. So if that's the case, I say, as long as you can get one of your first two picks to be a really quality offensive lineman, I'm okay with it.
All right. All right. Very good. Let's go. Have we done your number five yet?
My number five was Lomu.
Okay. My number five is Blake Miller. And your number four?
Caden Proctor was my number four. Obviously coming out of Alabama. So, you know, if you want to go back to the Isaac Newsome Ravens Alabama connection days, there you go. He's 6'7", 352. Again, I just have to read it out because they're just all massive human beings. And obviously the consensus coming out of high school, top offensive tackle in that 2023 class. So obviously has that pedigree to him. Someone with the 32.5-inch vertical. He had a 109-inch broad jump and at 352 pounds. That is absolutely ridiculous. And I did weigh ranking him higher just based off of that alone. The anchor is really good for him, where he just does not get moved off his spot, even against stronger guys. Like, even if guys try to bull rush him, he just, you're not moving him. He's not going anywhere. The punch is also really powerful. He's just a really powerful guy. Now, he's able to get downhill really effectively, especially off the ball when he's moving guys. He does that with, I mean, he has a lot of gusto when he's doing it. And I think that even with his size, we saw with some of the testing numbers, et cetera, he gets out into space, and even when pulling, he can reach those linebackers early, which I think is really cool as well. One of those guys as well that has that finisher mentality, which I think is really cool and something I think the Ravens are trying to get back to. But the problems, it is the opposite of what we've been talking about. It is the pass block technique, where for someone that's played as much as he has, I would wish it was in a bit of a better spot. But he's so dominant with some of the other stuff. I'm just like, all right, that can hopefully be coached upon and worked upon. Now, part of it is the arms, right? That's something that obviously is a big conversation point, and we've talked about a little bit over the course of our rankings. So that kind of shrinks some of your margin for error on some of those other things as well. Also, I think one of the big concern points is while he can get out to linebackers, some of the angles he takes to get there can be problematic at times, which, you know, when you're talking about maybe zone stuff, can cause some issues. And I think that for him, while he is super big and powerful, some of I've seen on scouting reports, weight management is a big concern because that's something where I think it was what, like 370 for him was at some of the points. And that's like literally like the words weight management on multiple scouting reports I've looked at. So apparently he needed coach motivation to slim down, which, you know, that's not great. But again, like, he's still effective being as big as he is, but you can't like, you can't get too like crazy in that regard. So I think he's a really intriguing prospect, but I do know that there are some concern points that might worry teams a little bit.
All right. I have him at number three. There's a lot to like about him. His athletic profile is average, but that's good for his size is what I'll say. I mean, he's an impressive athlete for the amount of weight that he carries. He had a shoulder surgery after 2024, where he missed the first two games of 24, played through it, and then had the surgery after the season. Not concerned about that. Outstanding pure pass blocker. He's all but immune to the bull rush. It's not outstanding is overstating it. He disrupts the pass rush plan effectively with very heavy hands. So he's a guy who slugs the opponent, and, you know, at 6'7", 352, he's packing a punch. He's more reactive than he should be is the other side of this. He needs to win more by disruption. And at the NFL level, a big part of his game is going to have to be, how does he throw that punch without getting out over his feet? How does he make first contact? He's got the work to do it because his arm length is not ideal, But there are a lot of edge rushers with shorter arms than 33 3/8. So hopefully he'll be okay there. He does overset fairly regularly versus speed, and he has both an inside and out and an outside problem that exists with that. So, and he oversets, that leaves him vulnerable to the inside. But he also doesn't really have the quickness to hit on his 12-6 bailout blocks. So if he does get beaten to the edge by speed, he doesn't have the good record of getting his guy past the pocket. So that's something I'd look at, and I'd say you really got to be good at one or the other. You either have to have a good bailout move for the outside, or you have to be good enough to have the feet to be able to react to those inside counters, because they're going to occur at the NFL level. And that said, with all of the weaknesses I'll talk about in terms of his pass blocking, he improved dramatically in his time at Alabama as a pass blocker. So it's something, again, that maybe Ledford could take him another step forward.
I was just going to say very quickly, Ledford is a huge factor in all this. Like he's a swing point for me in a lot of different ways. So I'm glad we keep mentioning him.
We do pretty much mention it with every developmental prospect. So in terms of run blocking, he's effective with the half climb, good at ceiling scraping traffic. Doesn't have a problem with that. He's got real power to drive block when he's got a double team. So if you have to figure out, how am I going to get this gap open on the left side or the right side, I guess, of the offensive line, then, you know, he can help you with that. Certainly to do it. Okay. In his case, it would be the left side based on where he played at Alabama. I'm projecting him to right tackle in the NFL. Certainly could also move to right guard, by the way, in the NFL. I think he's might in a lot of ways have a better physique for right guard in order of being able to move people around. He'd be one of the few people that really even plays guard in the NFL who can move some of the bigger defensive tackles around. But he did play every snap of his college career at left tackle. And ascending lineman probably would be better at guard than tackle. He is incredibly not yet 21. That plays tremendously in his favor in terms of being a developmental prospect. And the only way I see the Ravens taking him is if they traded back twice in the first round. And even so, there'd be a pretty good chance that somebody else gets there first. I think if they do take Proctor, it's an enormous bet on Ledford. It is just a bet on him to fix what is wrong with a very young man at this point and fix a lot of things about his game. Even so, you know, all the things we talk about with Caden Proctor, he shared the Jacobs blocking trophy for being the best SEC lineman this year. I mean, that is not a small time award. And still he's a guy who you can see a lot of problems that will occur as a pro for him. Anyway, he's my number three guy. So I guess we're on to your number three guy.
Yeah. And one quick thing on Proctor still is, you know, he's someone that is known as like a relentless worker, a grinder. And so you pair that, and I know a lot of these guys are, but you know, you pair that with a guy like Ledford, and you see the potential already there, and he's already like, some things you just can't teach, and Caleb Proctor has some of that, but I'm excited to, you know, see where he goes. I don't think it'll be Baltimore, but I think whoever gets him is going to get a really good player. So my number three is Monroe Freeling. And for him, there's a lot that I look at in terms of kind of where I fall with him. 6'7", 315. And when you look at who he is, he's a guy that was rated 32nd nationally.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
For 5 among offensive tackles. But then when you get to his time in college, his athleticism, I think, pops up. And you can look at his combine numbers. You can look at his tape. I mean, he's somebody that with the basketball background, that's the theme of these shows, is the basketball background. The balance is really good. He's really aware in space, which I like. And for me, the quick first step that he has when the snap hits, he can get to spots that he needs to really quickly. And to me, even when he locks onto a guy, like when he gets there, locks onto a player, he just kind of stays and gets feet moving downhill really effectively. The 34-inch arms at 6'7 is able to give him a pretty wide strike zone, which I like a lot. Now, again, the run blocking is the area where I think he needs to improve, whether that's with some leverage or maybe he just needs to add a little bit more weight. I've seen some scouting reports say potentially 10 to 15 pounds would do him really well. And, you know, there are some questions about the level of experience that he had and whether that is going to impact anything at all. So I think that that's where, when it comes to Proctor versus Freeling, to me, who, again, very close between 3 and 4 for me, could maybe like be the difference between why people view Proctor over Freeling. But again, still a really intriguing prospect that, again, I think a team's getting a really good football player.
Yeah, I like Freeling a lot. He's my number 3 guy. Actually, I think he's my number 2 guy, right? Yes, I moved one, so he's, let me confirm this here. Yes, he's my number 2 guy. You're going to have a guy mentioned who I moved, obviously.
Yeah.
Athleticism is all there, and you hit on it, so I'm not going to go over that. He's not fully developed physically. That's pretty clear, but he's not 22 until July. So he's one of the younger offensive tackles in this draft. Jolts his opponent when he's handing off a stunt or a twist. I really like to see that, by the way. The big problem with stunt and twist handoffs are when depth is not matched for a guard and tackle or guard and center where they're working to hand that off. And if they don't have match depth, the only way you can really recover some of that is to stun the player, and usually it's stun the under player, the player who's trying to cross the face, and jolt them towards the outside or towards the person you're handing off to him. And he does that, I think, fairly effectively. So I'd like to see in that. His lateral movement is ahead of his pure footwork. I think that's the case of he'll get there with coaching. Does maintain really good horizontal pocket space. Okay, this is an important point, and this is an anti-Ronnie Stanley point, I'll just say. Ronnie has been this slow death guy who basically trades space in the pocket for a continued mirror. Freeling is a guy who attacks the edge rusher and tries to maintain as much of that outside space as he can. So he's very different in that regard. And the guys who could do that, I really like it. They have to be good at it in order to make it work. But Freeling is a guy, I think, who's going to be able to make that work as a pro. Has some difficulty with speed rushers. Because he contests them at a distance, I would say. You're allowing them to play on an island. I mean, these speed rushers like to play wide nine oftentimes to put the guy on an island to start. And by the further you are away from the quarterback, the more you're giving an option to still have space to operate from. He's a run blocker. He has the quickness to impact the backside of run plays. And again, Ronnie Stanley could do it, and a lot of other tackles really are no impact at all on the backside of a run play. They kind of jog after the play and they don't do much. And you can Bryant McKinney, again, is a guy I'll mention. A decent level 2 movement for combinations and screens. He's another guy. He lunges in space at 6'7" and his kind of frame. I would expect that there is coaching that he could take on to try and become more of a kind of a moving obelisk that the level 2, level 3 player is going to have to try and figure out how to get around. It's the interesting thing about linemen who lunge in level 2 or level 3 is the opposing player never has any interest in running into them. So it's just a matter of they should be trying to basically show themselves without having to decide that they have to hit that player is usually all they have to do. He needs time to develop the upper and lower body. We don't have to go into that anymore. He could be a much better finisher. I think that'll come with it, with a more developed body. And he needs a good coach to maximize his ability to use his strikes. He's got the arm length, all the arm length you could want to be a better, more violent hand player, but he's not there yet. And that could be another Ledford opportunity. Four flags and 1,667 college snaps is outstanding. One every 416.8. He migrated to left tackle, where he had about 80% of his college snaps after some time at right tackle in 23 and 24. He's one of the most interesting players in this draft. He's been a huge groupthink riser since the combine. Now, obviously, the combine itself should have an impact, and it should have, I would think, a pretty rapid impact on how consensus mocks have him. But he's risen from number 79 by mock draft database at slightly after the combine to number 11 today. So the groupthink is that he'll be gone before the Ravens draft at 14. I think that would be good if he's drafted no worse than 14. And the ideal outcome might be that some team wants to move up and get him at 14. If we could find the right trade partner, Freeling would be good. I don't really see him as an ideal guy to bring in and play guard. It could be a decision the Ravens, make at the time. And they think, yeah, you know what? Hell of a player. He could replace Stanley in 2 years. He could be a guard until then. That would be a possibility, I guess, too, at number 14. And I would not be upset by the pick, but I don't see it as being, and I think they could get more value if they trade that pick at that point. Or at least I hope they could get more value.
Yeah, I think that, and obviously when you're talking about these guys, you're thinking long-term starter at, mm-hmm. The position. So then you factor in Stanley and whatnot. Yeah, what wouldn't be my pick? I mean, I'm with you where if you have a team that really wants Freeling at 14, assuming he's there, I think that I'd be comfortable trading away that pick. Not, into like the late 20s, but like, getting some decent value there for a player that's really good. I'm not saying Freeling's not good. I think he's going to be a really good player, but might not fit exactly what the Ravens need right now.
All right. So Freeling was my number two guy, but we still have your number two guy to go, right?
Yeah. So this is Spencer Fano, where I did not know that he was off the table. So my apologies, but
no, we'll talk about him. Don't worry.
Okay. Good. Cause I think this, again, for the Ravens, obviously I believe that the best option would be to move him inside and you have your option there at center. I think that some teams would maybe prefer to stick him in a tackle at the NFL level, which is intriguing because I think that different teams have different viewpoints and processes with it. So obviously the versatility is king with Spencer Fano in terms of where he projects at the NFL level. He's a really good mover, and especially for his size, 6'6", 311. And the thing that really sticks out to me with him is he's just explosive. Like, he fires out of his stance. He's just boom, snap. He's gone, and he beats guys to their spots. Some guys arrive at the same time. Maybe they're a little late. Spencer Fano was there waiting for you at some of those spots. And one of the big things that I think is intriguing as well is the balance and recovery skills that he has, where sometimes he maybe gets pushed back or gets put in a bad spot, but he's able to, again, recover from that and get back in the play, which to me, that's a mark of a good offensive lineman. In my opinion, the intensity is there. He's confident. He also is very communicative on the offensive line. And, one of the things that a lot of people rave about him with is the pre-snap adjustments and all the stuff that he's able to do there. The hands are really strong. Obviously for him, the arm length is going to be the concern in terms of keeping him at tackle. 32, or I think just over 32, if I'm not mistaken there. So that will probably scare some teams off and say, hey, he's probably better inside. But to me, I think that he gives the Ravens a lot of options where if they want to move him to center year one, and then if Stanley, whenever that is up and Stanley's time in Baltimore is done, depending on where their roster situation stands, you have a guy in Rosengarten that you can maybe move over. to the left side because of the experience. You know, Fano can play at a bunch of different spots. I don't want to just like, you know, shift everybody over and just keep moving guys around. I don't think that's good. But the optionality that you have there, not just for this season, but also for years in the future, and still getting a really, really good player, I think is valuable. Now, other stuff where sometimes pad level isn't where it needs to be, the placement initially on his hand sometimes can't be great, but I think he's a really good prospect when you want the versatility aspect of things, to where you have optionality. And I think in the NFL, that's really good. Plus the fact that he just brings a lot to the table anyway.
Yeah, I outstanding player. My number one interior offensive lineman. I'd be very happy with him at 14 if that's what it ended up with for the Ravens. I have him ahead of Yanne. So I'm, you know, that's how I had it ranked on that side of it. He's one of the best offensive line athletes that there's ever been. The short arms are the concern. He did have 16 flags in 2,204 college snaps. That's one of 137.8. That's a cause for concern, even at tackle. I do not have a breakdown on that, but if it's false starts, he's going to need to have a higher level of focus for multiple cadences that the Ravens will probably want to run. If it is a matter of holding penalties, and he's going to need to let go on the edge more effectively, and that can probably be coached up and improved. Very fast out of his stance. He talked about this, a plus mirror, despite occasional oversets. He regularly makes a 12 to 6 block. There's not always guys who are his short arm normally have more difficulty in making that 12 to 6 block to get the guy south of the pocket. Needs to bulk up his upper body. That's one of the things that's been talked about. But the good news is he's not 22 until November, so he's still one of the youngest linemen in this class. So we wouldn't really expect him to have that grown man strength fully developed. Uses his violence in his hands in the run game. He could finish with more pancakes. That may be a function of functional strength at this point, but I'd like to see him do more. He's quick enough to knock guys off and get people upset. Generally speaking, it's a good thing when you have your opponent upset. They worry about doing other things to you rather than doing things to the quarterback, if that's the case. He neutralizes his own quickness sometimes by playing too high. That's a problem with a lot of linemen. It's something that, again, coaching should be able to improve, particularly in a player as young and unpolished as he is. And I think that would be the hope here in Baltimore. Has that powerful lower body. So he really already looks like an IOL. And we've been talking about all the offensive tackles here. Most of them, with the exception maybe of Caden Proctor and a couple others, are guys that don't have really big, well-developed glutes and lower bodies, that pear shape that you like to see in a guard. These are guys who have vertical builds, you know, who are built to have the feet to move left and right. Fano, that's not the case. He's definitely a pear-shaped build to start with. He would directly address the Ravens' biggest need if he's plugged in either at center or right guard, either one. I think if he's there at number 14, he'll be on a short list of potential considerations. And I don't really see a trade back if he's there. I would potentially see a trade back if Vega is there.
Yeah. The versatility is huge, but again, I think that versatility lies not necessarily from tackle to center, but from center to guard, kind of like what you were talking about there, where again, like emergency situations, you know, he has that ability. He can go out there and do it. But I think, yes, he projects in for the Ravens in particular as an interior guy. I am just curious though, if it's a team that purely sees him as a tackle and that's where they want to place him. That's why I didn't take him off of my rankings completely here for tackles, where in my opinion, you know, because some people are concerned about potentially moving from tackle to center. Some are concerned about the arm length, which again would not be nearly as big of an issue, if an issue at all, moving inside. So I see no reasonable way to say no, the Ravens shouldn't take him if he's on the board at 14.
All right, well, let's maybe look at one honorable mention, or maybe two. We've talked about a lot of the guys, frankly, on the list I've got, but one or two honorable mentions, just maybe one or two things you like about them.
Yeah, for a couple of guys that,
by the way, we'll just alternate here because I find that to be a little bit easier to get through them quickly.
Okay, yeah, JC Davis is one for me out of Illinois, who I think is really intriguing. someone that, you know, I think when you look at his frame, I mean, he's 6'4", 322, so I guess not as tall as some of these other guys, if that's something, but still someone that has a pretty thick frame and is able to drive really effectively with power. He's also very patient as well. You know, he doesn't necessarily, like, honestly, like, he's not someone that, especially against like spin moves, he's not someone that overcommits early, which I think is really good for him. You know, sometimes he leads too often and just kind of like goes forward a little bit, which obviously is not good when you're talking about your base. You know, sometimes the hand placement isn't great. You know, the punch sometimes, you know, so, like for a guy like Proctor, for example, who just like he hits you and you're just like, whoa, that's not really a thing as much as I'd like with JC Davis. So again, potentially later round option, but one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset if they got him in, say, the fifth or sixth round. He's number 16 on my list. One guy that I have higher is Travis Burke of Memphis.
Yeah.
He's at number 11, and he's had a top 30 visit for the Ravens already. And apparently he's had top 30 visits for about seven different teams at this point. But 6'9", 325, 34 and a quarter inch arms, 23 in January, so he's not terribly old. Has an average athletic profile with a huge frame, and was a first team all AAAC player in at Memphis this last year. A lot of things I like about him: generates first contact regularly with his length, has some good lockout ability going to the armpits early. He'll rely on 12 to 6, but the Ravens obviously have some interest in him. One big problem is he's got 30 flags and 2,971 college snaps. So if they looked at him, they probably figured out how can we correct this, or they wouldn't have bothered with a 30 man visit. Sorry, a top 30 visit. So it'll be interesting. He played right tackle at Memphis in 25. Did play a few snaps at left tackle earlier. So it'd be a developmental right tackle. You'd be looking at having him be a replacement for Rosengarten that could be in 2028 if they couldn't come to an agreement on a long-term deal with him.
Yeah, he's a really intriguing player, and the fact that obviously the visit stuff is there adds more intrigue to it. I wouldn't be mad in the later rounds if they took a flyer there. Again, I think that it kind of tells us a little bit about their plans and their roster construction. But yeah, someone where the visit is there. So I think you got to look into it a little bit for sure.
All right. We mentioned some of the other guys on my list, like Tiernan and Shelton. You just mentioned JC Davis. I think I'm done on honorable mentions. You want to talk about number one or?
Yeah, we can go right into number one. So obviously for both of us, that's going to be Francis Maliagoa out of Miami, who pretty consensusly here is the number one guy. He's, especially with being 6'6", I think right around 329, he's someone that can just absorb a ton of contact, whether it's bull rush or guys getting into him really powerfully. He essentially almost sometimes redistributes that, and almost like he shocks guys at times. He does not get moved either. You know, talked about that a little bit with some of these guys, but he is one of the guys truly that, like, when guys try to go through him, they're the ones that are getting the brunt of that punishment. You know, he's not someone that gives up a lot of ground. He is an absolute anchor there. He punches really effectively too. Again, one of those guys that will stun you when he gets his hands on you and lands a really solid blow there. But the thing that I think intrigues me with him is, again, the movement. Like, with his size, he's able to get out into space. I mean, and especially when you look at some of the numbers, he was able to go, I think, 1.72 second 10-yard split in the scouting reports there. And obviously watching him do that, he's able to play with a mean streak too, which, again, I think, as I've said, the Ravens really want to get back to that. Now, again, I don't think he's going to be anywhere near Baltimore, in my opinion. But still, like, he's someone that plays with that, which I think a lot of teams look for that edge in their offensive linemen, and he brings that too. He also has really good balance and body control, which I like. And one of the things I did note, you know, in terms of his weaknesses is, you know, his lateral quickness is, you know, it's good, but it's not like the craziest thing you've ever seen. But again, with all the other stuff he brings to the table, that's okay. Sometimes his pad level can falter a little bit, but he's absolutely incredible. And if he's at 14, I think you just pick him and make it work, if we're being honest.
Yeah, I think he'd be the pick over Fano, and that would be it'd be a pretty clear pick to me to make at that point. And I think you go ahead and you move him to right guard. I think he's got a lot of characteristics that make him a guy at guard, and that, since that's where he'd play for the Ravens, I'll talk about that as I go through this. He has a couple brothers who both played at least college ball. Francisco was actually drafted by the Jets, and Frederick is playing college ball somewhere. Good pure pass blocker, reactive striker. In his case, a reactive striker is usually a bad thing. But in his case, it's really more of a strategy. He wants to try and get the other guy to make the first commitment, and then he'll do something with that. Has some lots of 12 to 6 blocking on technique. That's something I associate more with slow-footed offensive tackles, but he's certainly a quick-footed offensive tackle. Or reasonably quick, who does that well. Good mirror, excellent anchor, regardless of whether or not he's in a true pass set, by the way, that is important. He has the vulnerability to oversetting that you commonly see in most left tackles. In terms of the run blocking, he pivots very well when sealing or kicking out. And this is a guard characteristic. Okay, so the guard, more than typically on that right side, and he'd be playing right guard for the Ravens, would be in charge of opening the front gate in one of two directions. He either has to pivot the defensive tackle to the inside and kind of rotate his way through that block and maintain his position. We saw Marshall Yanda do that very well for years, and others, Kevin Zeitler does it very well. But he could also be responsible for kicking out, in which case he's got to be accurate and get to that edge player and help take care of him while there may or may not be pulling involved otherwise on that play. But he's a guy who can do either of those things. He's effective on combination blocks. I think he is potentially a guy who would be vulnerable on the inside to a push-pull block, since he likes to get out front. That would be one concern I would have, but it's a minor thing relative to all he brings to the position. He's played all but 10 snaps of his college career at right tackle. And I think, as you mentioned, that he's a guy, you take him at 14 and you trust the process for him to move. And I don't see any way in hell he wouldn't be starting immediately right guard for the Ravens if they picked him.
Yeah. One of the elite guys in this class, and someone that, again, BPA team, you take him and you make it work. And again, for a team that needs really good offensive linemen, it doesn't matter with a guy like this and the potential. I mean, he has 15-year potentially, if his career goes that long, starter right. Potential. That's how good he is. And I'd be over the moon if this were the pick for them, because, man, he would provide a lot to the offensive line in Baltimore. And then again, you can kind of reevaluate after the first couple of years, see what you want to do. Working guard, maybe you don't move him if he is, and maybe Stanley leaves and you want to move him out somewhere and move Rosengarten, you can do that. But he would fix a lot of issues for the Ravens pretty immediately.
Now with Fano, I think there's basically about a 0% chance that he'd ever move from the interior once he starts there, and particularly if he plays well. I don't think there's going to be any incentive to try and move him out to tackle. I feel a little bit different about Malagoa, that he could be a guy who is moved back to tackle. And has a limited time at guard. And Jonathan Ogden left guard his first year with the Ravens in 1996. So, it does happen, and it happens successfully, even with top shelf talent at some points. So it could repeat itself here. Now, one of the things that's come up on multiple shows here so far is the fiscal responsibility of taking an interior offensive lineman. And a lot of these tackles, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about moving them to the interior, since the Ravens tackle situation is fairly well set. I don't feel like that's an issue at all for Malagoa. I do feel like it's an issue of comparative value for any of the other guys who are strictly going to be long-term IOL players. And there's several of those among the tackle list who certainly fall into that, including Fano. Where are you on this? Are you okay with a guard / center at 14, knowing the reduction in frictions that creates, that'll help you keep that player a Raven for life, as opposed to a player like Sadiq, who the frictions are all in your favor. Now, I'm not asking you to judge specifically Sadiq, but I'm just saying Sadiq is the other end of the spectrum in terms of a guy who basically, if he plays at a Ring of Honor level in his first couple of years as a Raven, he's going to be a Raven for life because the frictions are so available to the Ravens. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I am okay with it, but I also understand that like there are guys that they can get in the second round and then use that 14th pick on a Sadiq or, you know, Tyson or whoever that is, that you would still come out of the draft okay. Now, you know, for a guy like whether it's Ioane or Fano or whoever it is, if we know the Ravens need interior offensive line help and you don't want to necessarily get too cute with it and say, well, we know that this guy's going to be there at 45 because you don't know that. So if you take a Sadiq at 14 and then you're essentially banking on Sansis or Pregnon to be there at 45 and then they're not, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, now it's only guys we have third round grades on and we don't want to spend a pick on a third. So at that point, I think if you do take a Sadiq, if I were the Ravens, I would maybe try to be a little aggressive and maybe if a guy like Sansis or Pregnon does fall, maybe trading up and securing a guy like that, as opposed to kind of waiting and seeing, and maybe that's just one extra pick that you give up. So you still end the draft with 10. I think that'd be a fine sweet spot for them, but I'm not as concerned with, you know, the value. I mean, if a guy can play, a guy can play. And in reality, if we're talking about this, and I know the fifth year option stuff is kind of still fresh with the Linderbaum situation, but you know, at the end of the day, like if you're getting four extremely elite years from a guy on the interior, when it's your need right now, I mean, Lamar is going to be, what, 33, 34 by the time, even if your option is not picked up at that point. And at this point, I think it's about maximizing Lamar's window. And while Sadiq certainly would do that in a different way, I'm not necessarily as concerned because while it is Eric DaCosta's job to think about both the short term and the long term and kind of weighing that out and balancing it out, if there is an option for me that involves getting an elite player at a position that you can plug and play start-wise and it fits a big need for you, I'm not going to turn that down.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't have a problem with that. And it has to start with, you believe, is Sadiq is a guy who can eliminate the need for a wide receiver.
Sure.
Whether or not he truly plays the X is a different matter. But if you're talking about Mekhi Lemon versus Sadiq, I mean, Mekhi Lemon's a pure slot receiver.
Right.
And Sadiq is a slot receiver, if you want to call it. He blurs the line between 11 and 12 personnel. And if you get that at the 55% of the price of a top wide receiver, then I think you'd be very foolish not to. So if you think Sadiq's college production is indicative that he's not going to become the pro you hope he would be, and you know, be at least a candidate for being in the Ring of Honor, then you wouldn't take him. I don't have any problem taking an offensive lineman over him, but I think it's actually a very difficult decision. I think it'll be a hard decision for the Ravens to make come draft night. Well, Kevin, really appreciate having you on as always. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Yeah, we're doing Locked On Ravens. I've been doing it for a while now as a daily Ravens podcast. We do twice per day, 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday. Plus we have other stuff like bonus episodes, instant reactions, et cetera. So if you want to check us out and get some more daily Ravens coverage, you can find us over on YouTube in video form or in audio form, wherever you get your podcast. It's the same show, both audio and video. So you're not missing out either which way you decide to watch or listen. And also you can find me on social media at ChaosTracker34, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, the whole nine yards there.
All right. Very good. Other folks out there, if you have a question you'd like answered, use hashtag film study mailbag. I'm going to try and direct that to the appropriate show or answer it with a 1 minute video, 1 to 3 minute video, because I could never get things done in 1 minute, but I'll try and be as terse as I can in those things, or get it onto a show with Voss on Friday Morning GM or one of our other programs that's appropriate for. If you have an idea for an episode, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Kevin, thanks again for coming on.
I always appreciate you, Ken. Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.